The rest of the story. Walter was dying. He had suspected it for days. He had seen it through the deceptive smiles of friends and physicians. Finally, it was Dr. Taylor who, in fairness to his patient, confronted him with the facts. Walter was not responding to the treatments as they had hoped. His kidneys would go first. The rest of him would promptly follow. It's time, the doctor told him, to put your house in order. Well, Walter's first reaction was what an odd way to tell a man to get ready to die. Put your house in order. But then it sunk in. In a short while, he would no longer be here at all. Trying to comprehend it, Walter stared in the imaginary distance until the shock yielded to an eerily calm resignation. And then came the waves of grief. The grief was really not so much for himself as for the family and friends that he was about to lose forever. Strange, Walter thought, how one mourns for others before they get a chance to mourn for you. But when the tears subsided, Walter summoned a priest. If he were to put his house in order, he must first tidy up the room reserved for God. I need you to administer the last rites, the priest was told. The man with the collar took Walter's hand. His expression was compassionate. How had this happened? He asked. Well, it was a strange thing, Walter said. He had tried to do his own dry cleaning, that was all. He'd gone down to the hardware store, bought a gallon of cleaning fluid, carbon tetrachloride. He'd been breathing it all afternoon, but did not collapse until later the same evening. An ambulance rushed him to the hospital where emergency tests revealed his kidneys had been poisoned by the carbon tet. Walter was immediately hooked up to a mechanical kidney. His own organs would need time to recover, Dr. Taylor said. But they had not. As the days passed, Walter felt progressively worse. There was nothing left now but to inform the patient the battle was lost. But do you know what? After last rites were solemnly given, after Walter's accountant had calculated his net worth, after his lawyer had made the proper arrangements for what went where, something strange and wonderful happened. His kidneys began to function again. The confounded physicians, shaking their heads but beaming through moist eyes of their own, were whispering words that physicians normally don't use, words like incredible and miracle. And perhaps it was both. Yet whenever you recall all you've just heard, you'll know what made the difference between life and death. For Walter, that fateful afternoon, might have fallen asleep next to the open can of deadly fluid and fumes. Except that a friend knocked on his door. November 22, 1963. A friend was there with the dreadful announcement that the president was dead. What I'm saying is that on the day John Kennedy was assassinated, Walter was repeatedly roused by related news. And it was that news which kept him mostly awake and alert and alive. For once upon a time, midst personal appearances in Pittsburgh, a hotel room bound performer decided to do his own dry cleaning, even trudged through a snowstorm to purchase a gallon of death in a can. And you know, Walter, this man who almost met his maker in a clean shirt, you know him as Walter Valentino Liberace. Liberace? Liberace. Only now you know the rest of the story.